Hey, welcome back to the Konya History Club. We're so happy you could join us today. Grab a seat, grab a drink, and let's get this meeting started. I'm Camille, and that's Ben.
Yo.
And today we're going to be talking about the lesser-known members of the kataas-taasang, kagalang-galangang katipunan ng mga anak ng bayan. So, a few background info about the Katipunan is that it's a society which was founded on July 7, 1892, was the leader for the revolution, or was the center for the revolution, which was launched when it was discovered by the Spanish government. It was initially only open to men. From the stuff that I read, the Katipunan, the Katipunan would only allow the men, and so they would have monthly dues or parang in contribution to the Katipunan, and the men were ordered to lie to their wives and their family as to where the money was going, because secret society kasi siya. So of course they can't just go telling everyone na, oh yeah, you know, I'm giving money to the Katipunan. So yeah, it was only open to men, but later women were admitted also. But that was a bit later already. So the KKK was the organization that led the revolution until 1897, when Bonifacio died and
parang na-replace na yung Katip. Wow, yung Katip. Na-replace na siya ng revolutionary government natin at that time. So hindi na siya Katipunan, more like a government.
In 1897, Bonifacio was executed, and Emilio Aguinaldo took over the organization and turned it into the Philippine Revolutionary Government. I also wanted to mention that in the last episode, in our last episode, when we were talking about the occult side of the Katipunan, we mentioned the initiation process of the Katipunan. So maybe, I guess I just wanted to share the info that I found regarding the initiation of the Katipunan and the rank system of the Katipunan also, because I found it kind of interesting. So I got this document from the archives for the KKK. So it says here that the system of ranks within the Katipunan changed over time, and there was a 5-tier hierarchy ascending from follower, which was kampon, then hand or kamay, prop or suhay, and pilar or halige to president or pangulo. So of course president or pangulo was Bonifacio. And then the KKK was again restructured eventually, and there were only 3 tiers, which was associate or katipon, soldier or kawal, and patriot or bayani. So that was the general hierarchy, and then eventually it again evolved, and natira na lang is akibat and kawal. And akibat is a word for companions, and kawal is still soldier. So like I mentioned last time, that there were tests of courage for initiation in the KKK, but I made the wrong example, because I said that there was a dagger that you had to put your hand against. There was a dagger that you had to put your hand against, and then you'd have to drop your hand, like thinking that the dagger was still there. So I was wrong with that, but tama that there were tests of courage for the initiation in the Katipunan. So an example of those would be that the recruit would be blindfolded, bound with rope, and led to a gallows, from which he is only rescued at the last moment. And after that test, he would be given a poison dagger and will be asked to execute a KKK member who has betrayed the society's secrets to the enemy. So it was a test of courage and commitment. So would you be willing to kill for to keep the secret of the KKK.
Oh naman, I mean, ba't ka sasali ng revolution kung hindi ka papatay?
I guess this is to kind of drive home the point na if ever there comes a time that they find out na bumaliktad ka sa KKK, you know, you'd be the one to be killed with a poison dagger. Ganun.
Mm-hmm.
And over that ritual, usually the president would be the one presiding over it. So, Bonifacio. And this ritual, I read the process for it and everything that they have to say. And para siya talagang misa. It sounds like a mass. Because there's an answer-response mechanic kind of thing na like the president would say, or the presider would say something, and the soldiers would have to respond a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
And then for that ritual, it would allude to the martyrdom or the execution of the three priests. So the Gomburza, Gomez, Burgos, and Zamora. And yeah, that was how they were initiated. And I guess I'll just read a quick passage from the ritual, which is the first thing that the presider says. This is written in Tagalog, but I'm gonna read the translated version. The esteemed president would say, "Beloved brothers, the soldier N is now in the chamber of reflection and will come to us here with the ambition of being elevated to the distinguished rank of patriot. For this purpose, I beg you, my beloved brothers, to consider calmly whether this brother possesses all the qualities that every patriot needs. In his answers, in the manner he reacts to the questions we shall ask, and in the way he responds to the trials we shall set. Nevertheless, whatever may be observed is not as important as remembering the need, before we divulge our high secrets, to be absolutely certain that he will be honorable, brave, loyal, and diligent. That he will be fearless in dealing with the hardships and anguish that must be endured. Above all, when we stand before our enemies in fearsome battle."
Yung guy na pag-usapan ko ngayon is, and the guy who started yung Katipunan movement sa Visayan region.
Alright.
Mm-hmm. The men. Well, I'm gonna be talking about several people, pero the first person I'm gonna talk about is the guy who established yun nga, the Katipunan sector na outside Luzon, which was General Francisco del Castillo. Walang, there's no like proper accounts where he was born, pero he was, it was said na he was born somewhere in Cebu, pero he moved to Aklan, where dun talaga ma-establish yung Katipunan outside Luzon. So, nung nag-breakout yung Katipunan sa Pilipinas, wow. Of course, super sikat sila eh. Like, Katipunan eh. You know?
Parang breakout like, artist of the summer,
ah. Yung big break nila eh. yung big break nila sa Pugadlawin.
Yung nag-drop like, sila
parang
ng
concert
album
eh,
sa Pugadlawin.
Parang
na-discover sila doon ng mga, ano eh, ng mga managers nila.
Yung Spaniards yung mga managers, na-discover sila.
Discover sila. Okay.
So yun yan, nung nag-breakout yung Katipunan, of course, you know, nag-spread worldwide. Okay, hindi man worldwide, but sa buong Pilipinas about it. I mean, even before yung Katipunan, mayroon naman talagang, you know, uprisings everywhere.
But it's like isolated, so, right?
More isolated. Like, hindi naman
revolution.
Mm-hmm. So it was really just like, you know, a bunch of farmers, a bunch of people na parang, or yung mga mercenaries who took it upon themselves to seek out justice. Parang ganun.
Mm-hmm.
So, nung nalaman ng mga tao na merong this group, this big group na nagtipon-tipon to, you know, fight for a singular cause, which was, you know, to eradicate Spanish rule. Mm-hmm. They were like, whoa, tang ina, yan, sali
whoa.
Tayo dyan. Like, you know, common enemy.
Mm-hmm. Bias, you know? Ko yun si Bonifacio eh.
So it's like, well, this Andres guy, you know, yeah. What a dreamy guy. You know, I want to be part of that.
Uh-huh.
Like, I'm gonna follow that guy. You know?
Yeah.
Known across the Philippines, mm-hmm. yung katipunan that time. So, si General Francisco del Castillo, he was like, I support this guy. I support this wholeheartedly. So, parang nag-donate talaga siya ng malaking pera kay Andres. He was like, bigyan kita ng 10,000 pesos, which was in the exact amount. So, yun, he was like, susundan kita. You know? I wanna be part of this. And si Andres naman, well, I'm not sure kung si Andres talaga yung nag-respond to him. Pero, yun nga, katipunan responded in kind. It was like, whoa, 10,000, okay, whoa. You're in. Ganun. You're a general now. Ganun. So yun, binigyan siya ng blessing ng katipunan to start yung sector ng katipunan outside the Luzon area. Karoon siya ng blessing. He's like, okay, go forth and multiply. He was even called yung supremo of that chapter. So, yun nga, parang even though si Andres yung supremo, parang different chapters have their own supremo rin.
Ah, okay.
So, if we thought na parang siya yung pinaka-top-top, I mean, dapat siya yung top-top.
Yeah, yeah.
Parang ganun. That's what, kaya sila nagkaroon ng general meeting with Aguinaldo. Yung that fateful day na sinampal niya si Daniel Tirona. Dapat yun, parang may election nga sila na parang...
The Heroes Convention.
So yes, going back nga, we know, nawawala na tayo, we digress.
We digress for the billionth time.
So yun, si Francisco del Castillo, again, the creator, yun creator, the guy who made a clan chapter possible, and also yung supremo ng chapter na yun. So yun, he became general, yun, automatic general siya. And siya na yung nag-conduct ng initiation. Siya na yung, you know, nag-establish ng members talaga ng katipunan sa Visayas. And yun, at one point, parang they tried going to, ito na yung we're gonna go to the main story.
Sige, go ahead.
So, yung Aklan chapter. Mm-hmm. Yung Aklan chapter, they would be known for yung mga anting-anting nila. And they would also establish their own female chapter. And of recent time, like last year, mm-hmm. nagkaroon ng feature film, like a full feature film, yung Aklan chapter ng Katipunan.
Mm-hmm.
Which is entitled... Daan Patungong Tawaya. They're not as famous as yung mga chapters sa Manila, pero
mm-hmm.
they were nonetheless very important. So yan nga, going back kay General del Castillo,
mm-hmm.
On that fateful day, we're gonna be talking about his assassination.
Oh.
And we'll even have the perspective of yung assassin niya. We'll be...
Whoa.
Getting like, a glimpse. So, on that fateful day in March 1897, mm-hmm. General Castillo and his leaders nag-decide sila mag-attack on one of the garrisons. You know, one of the popular garrisons sa Calibo. Calibo. Wow, sobrang konyo na.
Calibo.
They decided to attack one of those garrisons.
Mm-hmm.
And, so yun, nandun sila sa garrison, they're like, labas na kayo! Ganun, you know, magpakita kayo para patay na namin kayo. Parang ganun, naghahamon sila. So yun, parang hindi sila nagpapakita. Pero, yun nga, by then, parang known na yung katipunan. And known na si, ano, General Francisco. So parang malaki yung bounty sa kanya. So si Supremo, he was called Supremo na. You know, Supremo Francisco del Castillo. He came forward dun sa front entrance ng garrison na yun. Prancing on his white horse. You know? May air ng confidence. Yun na lang, may air ng confidence. So yung windows ng garrison were closed and parang it seemed nobody
seemed like nobody was there, and he called aloud for the captain. Sinabi niya, labas ka dito, kapitan. You know? Tapos may nagpaputok. May nagpaputok ng from the garrison, like parang warning shot. A shower of bullets came out of the building. Parang, you know, panakot. And at the same time, you know, kung mapatay siya, mapatay siya.
Parang, so, you know, if they
a barrage of bullets came at him. Pero yun, hindi siya natamaan. Hindi siya natamaan ng bullets at all.
Mm-hmm.
Like, as in a wave of bullets, ha? And parang siya lang yung nandun. Like, personally, pumunta siya dun sa front ng gate or front ng door ng garrison na yun. So yun, a barrage of bullets came at him. Pero hindi siya natamaan.
Mm-hmm.
And he attributes it to his anting-anting, which we'll touch upon later. And yun, he got cocky. He was like,
yun na yun?
He said something in Spanish. He was like, aumenta mas amigo, otro tiro mas amigo. Which I'm guessing, like, sige pa, ganun, like, otro tiro. So parang, you know what, pause tayo dito ah. Isa-search ko yung actual meaning. Increase more, friend. Another shot, friend. What?
Tagay.
Yan lang, yun. Sige pa.
Yan.
So yun, you know, nag-respond naman yung Spire. He's like, okay, sige, uulitin namin, you know. And then nag-fire pa sila more.
Fire pa sila more.
Sabi mo eh. Oh, sobrang konyo. Nag-fire pa sila more. And yun, one bullet struck his throat. One bullet found a fatal place near the throat of the fearless leader, and he dropped dead from his white horse, which is now splattered with blood.
Oh my God.
And yung mga kasama niya were poorly armed. Yun, takot sila. Like, whoa, yung supremo namin with yung anting-anting niya, yun, namatay. Kanina, hindi natatablan, pero tanga na.
Got shot in the neck.
Hindi pala.
Got
shot neck in Quebec.
That made me touch my neck. Parang I could feel it.
Yun yun, ako rin. Damn, ano kayang feeling nun?
Ikaw ah.
Parang kinky. Parang chinchoke ko yung sarili ko kanina.
Oh wow, no, that's completely different. That's completely different.
Iba na yan. Then, bullets lang pwede.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, yun yung, you know, that was yung end of yung reign ni Supremo Francisco del Castillo.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, hindi yun yung end ng Aklan chapter because yun, nagpatuloy pa rin yung revolution. And shortly after his death, dun tayo nagkaroon ng yung 19 martyrs of Aklan. Which, you know, we will touch on later. Pero doon naman sa perspective ng assassin niya, yung nakatama ng fateful bullet na yun. That's that one bullet that hit his throat. And this guy's name is Moises Elicito, dubbed the assassin of General Francisco del Castillo.
He's Spanish, I assume.
Na Pilipino siya actually.
What?
Yung reference natin dito, si Barrios and si Sichon, ng the Katipunan in Aklan from the National Centennial Commission 1997. So si Moises Elicito pinanganak siya sa Aklan, and yung parents niya pumunta sa isang fortune teller na sinabi sa kanya na paglaki ni Moises makakapatay siya ng person, which is yung premonition sa pagpatay kay General, you know. So, to lessen yung penalty, yun yung fortune teller that actually, you know, set the course ng life ni Moises. Kasi yung parents ni Moises, yung ginawa nila from that information, they decided na Moises should work for the Spanish government. So, when Moises was 21, he worked sa Guardia Civil in Capiz.
How did they get that from the fortune that they were told?
Ah, kasi yung rationale nila is that if he would work from the government, kung makapatay siya ng person, mas lesser yung penalty. You know? Like, kung nasa Spanish side siya, edi yung mapapatay niya, Filipino. So parang,
okay.
you know, okay. Mas since malakas yung Spanish, like, you know, mas chill, ganun.
Mas chill, alright. Okay, alright. I mean, I still yeah, don't like it, but okay, go ahead.
Well, yeah, pero you know, the parents had to do what they gotta do.
Yeah, okay.
And nag-train siya as sharpshooter. Again, foreshadowing. Naging sharpshooter siya ng mga Guardia Civil. And in one of his nights, you know, standing guard, meron siyang nakasalubong na Spanish officer na who was clearly drunk at that time. And yung officer na yun tried to kill him. Ganun, kasi lasing siya. So,
even though part siya ng Guardia Civil.
Si Moises naman, trying to defend himself. Well, yeah, pero, you know, lasing yung guy. He's like, ano yung nagawa mo dito? So, yun, si Moises naman, he's like, whoa, I'm a freaking guard, yo. You can't attack me. So, like self-defense siya. And in the process, napatay niya yung Spanish officer na yun. And of course, since napatay niya yung officer na yun, napunta siya sa jail. So, while he was in jail, doon na sumikat si, ano, si General Del Castillo. You know, nalaman yung katipunan. He was like, whoa. Of course, nagkaroon ng bounty kay Del Castillo. And, yun niya, si Moises, since naging sympathizer na siya, he's like, Guardia Civil naman ako. So, why not mag-volunteer tayo? Since kasama siya sa Guardia Civil, and he did train as a sharpshooter, mm-hmm. yun, the Spaniards sought his services. He was like, we want this guy. So yun, on that fateful day, nandun si Moises. Nandun siya sa garrison. He was like, this is my destiny. Ito na yung sinasabi ng fortune teller. Ito na, this is gonna happen. Yun na, nandun pala siya sa garrison. Mm-hmm. Yung nagpa-prance around si Del Castillo, you know, so fiercely. He was like, labas nyo dito yung kapitan nyo. Okay, I want to talk to this guy. Mm-hmm. They fired shots. Okay. Again, nagtotod si Del Castillo. He's like, mga ginagawa nyo, ganun. Isa pa. Ay, hindi ako matatablan yan. Mm-hmm. Mga gonggong. Mm-hmm. This may or may not be yung persona ni Francisco Del Castillo. Okay?
It's Ben's interpretation. Pero
it was implied na he was confident. Okay?
Uh-huh. It's so, Ben's interpretation.
Ito na lang iniisip ko na confidence niya. Pero totoo yung, totoo yung increase more friend, another shot friend. Totoo yan, sinabi niya yan, ha?
Uh-huh.
Verbatim yan. So, kaya siya cocky. Kasi, yun nga, yung anting-anting niya was sort of like a shield. It says here na although Del Castillo was hit with a bullet, he was not wounded. He was like, ha? Ano yun? Ganun? Ha? Bala yun? Ganun? So yun, si Del Castillo, you know, chill siya. He was chill kasi he was relying on two anting-antings. A white stone that was embedded on his skin. Yeah, parang, hindi ko alam, in injection or gumawa sila ng incision then pinasok yung white stone.
Oh my god.
So yun yung dalawang anting-anting niya, a white stone embedded on his skin and a red handkerchief that would bring him back to life in case he was fatally shot. Pag mamatay na siya, yung red handkerchief ilalagay sa head niya or sa face niya. So yeah, that was how it was used. And with those two anting-antings, parang yun, he felt invincible. He's like, come at me. Alright? You know, I got all the power I need. Pero yun, our sharpshooter, si Moises, he was like, tingnan natin. Fully aware of yung mga anting-anting ni Del Castillo. Actually, nagpakita nga siya, you know. Nagpakita siya kay Del Castillo. He was like, yung kapitan wala dito. Captain's not here. Just surrender. Tapos tinawanan lang siya, ni Del Castillo. Pero si Del Castillo, is like, yung resolve niya, super strong din. He was like, no. Labas mo si freaking kapitan. Dito na kaming lahat. So, yun, nagkaroon ulit ng bagong shootout. Pero hindi pa rin natatablan si Del Castillo. Pero yun, at that time, aware na yung mga tao. Aware na si Moises na meron siyang anting-anting. Like, hindi ata natin ito matatalo eh. Kailangan natin ng counter to his anting-anting. So, of course, nag-ensue pa rin yung shootout. And of course, parang cocky pa rin si Del Castillo. Hindi siyang tatablan eh. Pero si Moises, mayroon na pala siyang ibang ginagawa on the sidelines. Mayroon pala siyang intel na laman niya sa co-prisoner niya sa Capiz na to counteract an anting-anting. Mayroon palang ganun eh. Mayroon palang reversal. To counteract raw an anting-anting, Dapat yung baril, yung muzzle ng baril mo, dapat lagyan ng kanin. So, hindi as cool. Hindi as cool as it, as you would have thought it would be. Or at least I thought, pero...
Like, yes, cooked rice. Magsasain ka pa.
Hindi naman kailangan fresh. Hindi mo lang, baka may kanin sila sa bahay. Ganun. Sa Garrison, he's like, bigyan mo unang isang cup dito. Kuya, pang-epengin ng isang cup.
Kuya, extra rice nga.
So yun, nung nakuha niya yung rice,
may talkie-talkie
pala siya malapit na si Kuya with the rice. Padala nga ng rice dito. Habang yung mga tao namamatay, yun, nagbabarilan, nag-ask for ammo, he's like, gusto ko ng kanin. Padala mo ako ng kanin dito.
Right now.
Pero, of course, to everyone, parang normal lang eh. It's like, oh, baka gutom to. Ganun.
Yeah, well, I mean...
Or alam rin nila, it's like, oh my God, he's gonna do the move.
He's gonna do the counter, the thing.
It's like, oh shit.
Shit, he's bringing out the race.
So yun, nilabas niya na yung secret weapon. He's like, I found the secret. So nilagyan niya ng muzzle yung gun niya. Then, iname niya. Yun yung sharpshooter siya eh. Kay Del Castillo. He fired the shot, and natamaan si Castillo. He was like, whoa. And then yun, he fell from his horse, bleeding from his neck. And yun, natakot yung mga subordinates niya. Actually, in-instruct niya yung assistant niya. He was like, okay, kung mamatay na ako, ikaw bahas handkerchief ko, lagay mo sa mukha ko. As I said earlier, yung anting-anting niya na red handkerchief, yung power nun, pag mamatay na siya, ilalagay lang sa mukha niya yung handkerchief and may resurrect na siya or may heal yung wounds niya. So, nung nabaril siya, and natamaan talaga siya, natakot yung mga kasama niya. I was like, whoa, this has never happened in the history of anting-antings.
Okay.
And nagpanic sila. I was like, whoa, shit. Ganun. So, panic sila. They scampered away. And yung assistant niya, natakot yun siya. So, hindi niya nalagay yung handkerchief sa mukha ni Del Castillo. Doon siya namatay. All because of his assistant who did not place correctly yung handkerchief sa mukha niya. Malay natin, baka nagpatuloy talaga. Baka gumana yung anting-anting na yun. And maybe the legend would have still continued. Pero, from this account, makikita natin a first-hand account and a more detailed account of how the anting-antings were used and viewed by the people. Like, clearly, both sides nga. So, yun nga, upon his death, of course, natakot yung mga tao at first. Parang, whoa, this has never happened before in the history of everything. First split second lang naman. On his death, nagpatuloy yung revolutions, lumaki yung members, dumami yung members ng Katipunan. They were enraged, Pinatay niyo yung supremo namin, tangina nyo. So, 1 month after the death of Del Castillo, the Vivo Massacre took place in Vivo, Aklan, wherein about 40 Spanish troopers came to a feast. Kala nila feast lang talaga, pero actually, yun nga, it was a ploy to lure them. And at the drop of a handkerchief, hindi ko alam kung tribute yun sa ano, kung tribute yun kay Del Castillo with his red handkerchief. Pero hindi, baka hindi naman. So with the drop of a handkerchief, the servants who were actually Katipuneros started to hack them to death. So these 40 Spanish troopers were massacred. Thus, the Vivo Massacre. And after noon, of course, nagkaroon ng massive retaliation from the Spaniards. Maraming mga tinorture ng mga Katipuneros. They tried to weed them out. And at some point, they tried to, forgive yung mga Katipuneros. They're like, sige, mag-surrender kayong lahat. And then kung mag-surrender kayo, yun, magkakaroon tayo ng amnesty. Yun, maraming Katipuneros yung mga nag-surrender. They're like, okay, ganun. Free, clean slate tayo. Kahit marami akong pinatay na Spaniards. Clean slate. Alright. From these group of surrenderees, yung mga Spanish authorities, they selected 19 people whom they adjudged to be the leaders. And, sige, let's name them, to honor them. Si Roman Aguirre, Tomas Briones, Domingo de la Cruz, Valeriano Dalida, Claro Delgado, Angelo Fernandez, Benito Iban, Candido Iban, Simon Inocencio, Isidoro Jimenez, Catalino Mangat, Lamberto Mangat, Valeriano Masinda, Maximo Matyong, Simplicio Reyes, Canuto Segovia, Gabino Sukang, Francisco Villorente, at si Gabino Yonsal. And they captured two more men, pero nirelease sila kasi mayaman sila. So, reference again to mga mayayaman, they get away with everything.
Mm-hmm.
Pero yun. So, originally 21, pero 19 lang. And these 19 men, were imprisoned. They were starved, lashed, pounded by the butts of guns, and spat upon. Pinaulanan, they were bound together and forced into a black hole of a stone cell. They were handcuffed. So parang naka-cuff sila sa isang bamboo pole na isang straight line.
Mm-hmm.
And then they were strung high up against the wall. And then nagkaroon ng firing squad.
Damn.
And yan, pinagbabaril sila on that fateful day in March 23, 1897.
Mm-hmm.
And sa mga hindi namatay, they were bayoneted. That was a night of darkness and terror in Calibo. Town awoke to hear the sharply ringing rifle shots and the cries and groans of farewell of these 19 martyrs of Aklan. And every March 23, Aklan would celebrate these 19 fallen heroes. As to what happened to Moises, I said earlier na we would come back to him as to why would he have a biographer. So after the revolution, si Moises, he got appointed as a judge in Aklan. So from sharpshooter, naging judge siya.
Dang!
Okay. So yun, if you guys go to Calibo, you will see yung Shrine del Castillo.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go to Banga Municipal Cemetery, makikita nyo yung tomb ni Moises Ilicito. Pero yun, that's a portion of the history ng Katipunan, the first sector ng Katipunan outside of Luzon. The end.
Tonight, I wanted to talk about one of the fearless women who were part of the KKK. So, I mentioned a while ago that initially, the Katipunan only allowed men into its ranks. And it was only eventually that women were allowed to join. I don't really know the rationale for why that is, but personally, I assume that it was, you know, it was the preconception of women being like Maria Claras and stuff like that. But despite that description or preconception, women actually played a big part in the Katipunan. More commonly, we know that women were the ones who handed out the newspapers or like the writings of the Katipunan, and they were spies, ganun, because sadly, they were also underestimated by the Spaniards, but it proved to be an advantage for the Katipunan because the women were, you know, underestimated, they made for great spies. But I think a lesser known role of Filipinas in the KKK was that they were leaders in battle. So tonight I wanted to talk mm-hmm. about the Philippines' first, or the KKK's first female general, Agueda Cahabagan.
Wow.
Okay, so Agueda hails from Laguna, and although she would later become a general, like a formal general, she was already known as Generala even before she became a general. She was also known as the Tagalog Joan of Arc. But I actually kinda like Generala better for her. Parang it sounds so badass. An account by the Cavite General Santiago Alvarez states that during battles, Agueda would be astride a horse holding a revolver in her right hand and the reins and a dagger in the left. Fearlessly and with head held high, she charged against the enemy. She rallied the others to do the same, and many did give up their lives valiantly. But it should be noted that her choice of weapons varies depending on the accounts, with some stating that she would use a rifle and a bolo instead of a revolver and a dagger. But whichever version, it is agreed that her manlike fighting prowess became legendary, as witnesses of the Battle of San Pablo saw Cahabagan jumping over wide trenches and high fences, outdoing even the men. So, the Battle of San Pablo is one of the battles which I will be talking about tonight, because tonight I will be talking about some of her most notable battles. Specifically, I will be talking about three battles.
Damn!
Yeah, three battles that she led and participated in. In 1897, a battle occurred in San Pablo against the Spanish. So, just to give a general idea, 1897 was not a great year for the Philippine Revolution. The Spaniards were slowly regaining their balance because I think initially they were kind of caught off guard by the sudden attack of the Philippine Revolution. So, slowly, the Spaniards were regaining their footing and they started a counter-offensive.
Mm-hmm.
And although Cavite had been the hub of the victorious Katipunan the years prior, it began to lose town after town to the Spaniards, forcing the Katipunan's commanders to retreat to either Biak-Nabato in Bulacan or to Laguna. During that time, Laguna was being used as a pathway to smuggle troops and supplies across the battlefields in Tayabas and Cavite. And it was there that Severino Taino, who was the provincial commander of the Katipunan, conducted guerrilla warfare after a defeat in November 1896. So, among those who were forced to retreat from Cavite towards Laguna was Miguel Malvar, who made contact with Taino. And it was because of this meeting that there are differing accounts on who between them appointed Agueda to lead troops. But regardless of that, in May of 1897, Agueda was appointed to lead a detachment of Laguna-based revolutionaries armed with rifles and daggers. During this battle, Agueda's forces bore the brunt of combat, wherein they surrounded San Pablo, where the enemy had fled to. By the time Filipino reinforcements arrived, most of the battle was already won.
Damn, gaano karami sila?
It doesn't say here, but it's still an impressive feat.
That's true.
Because she didn't even need reinforcements. She was just like, you know, I got this, bro. I got this.
Mas mataas pa yung batting average niya kaysa kay ano, kay Aguinaldo.
So, a few months later. So, this happened in May of 1897. So, a few months later, in October of 1897, Agueda joined General Artemio Ricarte in a three-day attack on the San Pablo garrison of the Spanish in Laguna from October 9 to 11. Again, similar to the battle in May, Agueda's forces bore the brunt of the battle, but in this case, the Spaniards attacked them, leaving their fortified positions in the town. But despite that change, the Spaniards were still repelled and forced again to retreat to San Pablo. With those two wins under her belt, because of her bravery and her invaluable contribution to the fight against the Spanish, on April 6, 1899, General Pio del Pilar addressed a letter to the Secretary of War, Baldomero Aguinaldo, recognizing her service to the country and recommended that she be given the title of General. Del Pilar notes that under the circumstances which the Philippines was then facing, Agueda's attitude is one that we must look upon with gratification in our countrymen. I do not believe that I will be taking up your time in vain in joining my petition to that of Señora Agueda, whose enthusiasm is worthy of praise. And with that, Agueda Cahabagan was appointed as a general on January
4, 1899. Wow. Official.
Yeah. Sadly though, I saw two sources one of them says that her name appears in the roster of generals, but another source says that the roster of generals lists a Señor Agüese Cajabagan as a brigadier general under the reserve corps appointed in January 4, 1899. So, I don't know if she was... if her name, Agüeda Cajabagan, was formally put into the roster of generals, or if a senior version of her was put into the list instead of her actual name. So that's if that's in fact true.
That's suspicious.
Yeah.
Yung parang pinakaya ng li, and they're like, okay, this guy, this has to be a guy.
Yeah, parang they couldn't, di nila matanggap that a woman was made into a general, so they made it into a man. They were probably thinking na this has to be like a clerical error. Parang may typo lang to. Senior talaga to. That's already the best interpretation that we could do. The sadder interpretation is that they knew who she was and they purposefully made her into a man. So I don't know which one's sadder.
Either one. The fact stands. They made her a man.
Yeah. Well, yun nga, I couldn't find the roster of generals, so if anyone has that on hand, you know, correct me if I'm wrong. Ayun, so she was officially made into a general. Then, the Philippine-American War began in February 1899. And you already know, our girl, Agüeda, was not having any of that shit.
Yes, queen.
Yeah, so...
Yes, queen!
Oh my god. So, Agüeda again fought against the foreign invaders together with her homeboys, Miguel Malvar and Artemio Ricarte. With the latter, she led the defense of Laguna against the Americans from 1900 to 1901.
You know, big time pala siya. Like, yung mga cohorts niya, mga superstars. Superstars ng Philippine generals. Sila General Malvar and General Ricarte. And, you know, those names ought to ring a bell. Sila yung mga, sila talaga yung sikat na and longest lasting na general. And particularly si Malvar was known to be the last general to surrender during that period, during the First Republic or during the Spanish period, or during the end of the Spanish period, kasi he surrendered around 1902, that year. So yun yung mga cohorts ni General Agüeda. So cohorts meaning kasama rin siya sa superstars.
Yes, she was actually, yeah. And I'm happy that you mentioned that Miguel Malvar was one of the last to surrender to the Americans, because I will touch upon that a bit later on.
Interesting.
Yeah, so the Philippine-American War was more brutal as the conduct of combat and stateside news coverage was influenced by racism and imperial ambition. And some U.S. academics of the time claimed Filipinos were inferior, not only because of our appearance, but because of resorting to guerrilla warfare, which they considered to be quote-unquote unmanly. The overall American commander, Elwell Otis, was notorious for initiating combat even without orders from Washington, and U.S. gunboats on Laguna de Bay bombed coastal towns like Paete, killing numerous civilians. Wary of Filipinos entrenched in nearby mountains, the Americans instead fortified captured towns like San Pablo and Santa Cruz, Cajabagan's birthplace, forcing a stalemate until more troops arrived from the states, eventually routing the Filipinos. With the Filipino forces being overpowered, Agüeda's military career was brought to a halt. But despite this, her death and its cause was not ascertained. According to the biographies of Ricarte and Malvar, she was killed in 1901 in Laguna, while other accounts say that she was captured in 1902 by American forces. The latter account is what appears on the marker made in memory of her. So, in the marker that was put up for Agueda, it says that dinakip siya ng mga Amerikano ng 1902. To end this tribute for Agueda Cahabagan, I want to share the letter she sent in 1901 to General Cailes, or Cailes, the new commander of Laguna who had chosen to surrender. In the letter, Agueda writes, "In the province of Morong, nobody supports the right path for the oppressed poor who are like us, because they do not follow people from other places. But the poor should be attended to and guided by the right path of freedom in accordance with your expectations. I am requesting for an authorization to gather the forces who were part of the earlier uprising." From this letter, we can glean that no matter how dire the situation was and how overpowering the opponent seemed, she had not thought for a second that giving up was an option. Agueda was an accomplished military woman who was adept in fighting, and her nationalism and bravery burned bright in her heart, encouraging and inspiring her country to imbibe the same virtues. So,
dang, mas pending mo kaysa sa akin.
Pero yeah, I mean, parang, actually, I won't note parang two things with the two stories. Like yung first, of course, yung guerrilla tactics ng mga Filipinos, which is, you know, commendable, actually. Parang, that tactic is something na we had to, ano, we had to adapt. And, parang wala lang. I mean, of course, it would be against yung ideals ng Americans, kasi parang think of yung cowboys, yung parang yung mga face-off nila na parang one-on-one, face-to-face silang dalawa lang, nothing in between them, parang you know where you're shooting at. And yun nga, parang fair pa rin yun eh,
yeah.
Parang nandun yung i-presupposes na fair kayo, na parang same kayo babaril, same yung parang may baril kayong dalawa, capable kayo. Parang yun, fair pa rin yun. Pero kung yung isa, yun, may disadvantage siya. So obviously, parang it wouldn't be the same. Parang he would try to get something out of his sleeve rin. And parang tayo yun.
Yeah.
We were that person na who had to come up with something different para may advantage tayo. And yun, we had to make with what we had, which was parang this knowledge of the area, and yun, stealth.
Yeah, and yun nga, I like that you pointed that out, because yun, that view, it comes from kind of a perspective of privilege, because the Americans, they never really had to, parang yun nga, I mean, they might have resorted into with guerrilla tactics, you know. I don't really know a lot about American history, but yeah, I mean, that view, I feel like, comes from a point of privilege, because if you're a country that has a lot of firepower, you wouldn't even think about doing guerrilla warfare, because you already have the arms to back up your forces. But if you were like us, like Filipinos, we didn't have sufficient firepower, and it would have been more foolish to try to, I mean, brave but foolish to fight Americans head on and not have guns. And guerrilla warfare wasn't any less brave. I mean, they were still putting their lives at risk.
Well, parang just imagine yourself parang in their shoes. I mean, yung shoes ng mga Filipino. So parang anong gusto mong gawin namin? Like
just charge at them.
Mamatay ganun, pumunta doon, mamatay ganun. This isn't a game.
Yeah.
Right, parang mamatay kami. May parallelism kay Del Castillo, which is yung the epitome, you know, epitome ng if we had that advantage. Yung analogy ng thinking ng Americans who had the advantage, and si Del Castillo with advantage.
Alright,
like, gusto niya rin mag-man-to-man eh. It's like, labas mo yung kapitan mo, man-to-man tayo, usap tayo. Kasi nga, he had, parang, may advantage siya eh. He's like, he believed that he had the upper hand. Yun yun, hindi siya natatablan eh.
Yeah.
So, parang katulang sa Americans, parang, kung lalaki ka talaga, labas ka. Ganun. Pero in fact, it just meant na, yun nga, parang he felt na may advantage siya. Parang he was conscious na he had an advantage.
Yeah.
Kaya siya cocky.
Exactly.
Pero yeah, moving on dun sa gorillas. Yung very, very, ano ba, very interesting topic yung kay General Agueda. Na she was the first general, lady general ng ano, ng Katipunan. And I didn't even know that. Akala ko lang talaga yung prominent women sa Katipunan were ano, si Gregorio de Jesus, si Tandang Sora, sister nila Bonifacio, the remaining sister ng Bonifacio family, si Esplionioda. Forgive my pronunciation. And maybe iba rin yung pangalan. Pero,
okay.
It starts with an E.
Okay.
Si E. Bonifacio. Who also played a role in the war. They played many, many roles. They were dynamic because they had to be. You know, they had to be in order to contribute. Kasi parang, parang they don't want to be just relegated to that position na parang caretaker. Ganun.
Yeah, they didn't want to be confined.
Yeah, they didn't want to be confined. They had to be flexible. And they wanted to be flexible.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I just wish na, there would be more accounts of yung roles that women played.
Yun nga, like for example, Agueda. Not really a lot is known about her. Like, as opposed to, for example, Malvar and Ricarte, they actually had biographies, but Agueda didn't really have that. It's possible that, you know, women weren't really viewed as vital parts of the Katipunan enough for them to be documented. Even though, as we know now, they did play a huge part in the Katipunan. But during that time, I think they were focused mostly on the men. So, even though they played a huge part, they weren't really given the spotlight, even though they deserved it. And as we mentioned a while ago, women weren't allowed to enter in the Katipunan at first. Later on, when women were allowed to enter the Katipunan, they actually were not allowed to enter if their husband was not part of the Katipunan. So as a woman, by yourself, you couldn't go, you couldn't join the Katipunan.
Okay,
yeah, I'm thankful for Agueda that, you know, she proved them wrong and she made the men see that I'm here, I'm a badass. She was so good that she was recommended to become a general. Miguel Malvar or General Taino asked for her to join their fight, even though she wasn't actually a general yet at that point. That's how good she was. And that's why I chose Agueda, because she highlights that role that women played. They shouldn't be typecast into our history because they were so much more than that.
So yeah, this just marks the first episode of the Katipunan. Of course, we are establishing firsts right now. Like, ano ba yung important sa history for us, like what piques our interest right now. But of course, we will have more succeeding episodes about the Katipunan, and we hope to touch upon more aspects, more people, hopefully more unknown people.
Yeah, and maybe more, some known people that we want to highlight.
Yung mga controversial aspects of people, ganun.
Because, you know, the Katipunan is big and filled with intrigue.
So, of course, Pilipinas, eh. Madaming drama. Daming betrayal, ganun. Alam mo yan.
Alam mo yan? Talking to you. You specifically. You know who you are.
Yeah. So this marks yet another end of another episode of the Konyo History Club. We hope you join us next time for another meeting. You know, same time, same place in this club room, old and dusty club room with good old Camille and Ben.
Yes.
We'll be here and you can message us anytime.
Yes, you can reach us at Konyo History Club on Twitter and konyohistoryclub@gmail.com for your emails.
And with that, we bid you paalam at sa pagbabalik.
At sa susunod.